Simon Rich has got a new one out. Simon Rich is a comedy writer, SNL comedy writer, the second youngest comedy writer ever on Saturday Night Live, Simon Rich. The new one is called The Last Girlfriend on Earth. It's about girlfriends, largely. And he's on the phone with us right now from Oakland. Are you on tour there, Simon?
I live here, actually.
Oh, you live in Oakland?
Yeah. I moved out here with my girlfriend, and it's beautiful, you know. But she's from Wisconsin.
Where is she from? In Wisconsin.
Mequon.
That's not Wisconsin. Oh yeah, that is. That's right. I've been to Mequon.
She lied to me.
Yeah, it's a nice little fishing village, Mequon. Yeah, a lot of people go. It's near Thiensville, which is scenic. The scenic part of Mequon is called Thiensville. I don't know if you know that.
That's easy to remember.
Yeah, so do you ever get back here then, to Mequon area? Or?
Yeah, I went there for over the Christmas holidays, and it was a lot of fun. I saw a Homestead Highlanders high school hockey game.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're great.
They pay a lot for that team. They're actually professionals. They have a lot of money in Mequon, so they actually buy professional players for the high school teams. You know,
it's a good strategy.
It's really, why not? You can do it. The Last Girlfriend on Earth. Now, so this book is like either you have had a lot of experience with women or like very little. Which is it? Because it's a lot of frustration, misunderstanding, and awkward moments in trying to mate, basically.
Yeah, it's true. I would say the embarrassing parts are realistic and autobiographical, and the triumphant parts maybe a little bit more made up.
Yeah. I do love the alternative title, Love in the Time of HPV. That's a good title.
I wanted to go with it. My publisher said it was too, you know, on the nose.
Too on the nose. I don't know. That was a good one. Your brother writes the apocalyptic stuff, right? And you're the comic stuff. Is that how when you get together? I mean, can you talk to one another?
Yeah, we mostly just talk about baseball.
Just baseball?
Yeah, it's sort of right down the middle. Yeah. I guess we've both sort of written about the apocalypse with our recent books.
Yeah, but yours is like a comic apocalypse. The apocalypse is incidental to your dating problems for you.
Yeah, the story, The Last Girlfriend on Earth, it's just a guy who, a plague wipes out all the women except for his girlfriend, and all the men on Earth remain, and he's pretty convinced that they're all hitting on his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Which they are, because yeah. She's the last one left.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not in his head.
Right. So, and that's pretty much your experience, even without the apocalypse? Because every guy... Every guy thinks that probably, you know, at in their 20s, let's say.
Yeah, that's really with all these stories. I spent a lot of years writing pretty realistic fiction about my love life and stories about being in your 20s and about dating, and the stories were so boring because my life just wasn't that unique or interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually I decided I'm not going to write about this stuff the way it happens. I'm going to write about it the way it feels. Because, you know, when you get a girl's phone number, you are sort of expecting a call from the president and a MacArthur Genius grant. And when, you know, and when your ex-girlfriend is dating somebody new, it is sort of like, they're dating a war criminal.
Yeah, so, dating Hitler.
Exactly. Yeah. This is one of the stories. Yeah. The guy finds out his ex-girlfriend is dating Hitler, and everyone else tells him he needs to calm down about it.
Yeah. Right. Of course, then there's the other side of that, when you're dating Mother Teresa.
Yeah, exactly. That's a story about a guy who, you know, everyone tells him he should be more happy about his relationship because she's so sweet. You know, she's like a saint. But, he's just... They're not physically compatible.
Yeah. So these are just actually things that have happened to you that you escalate into these proportions, right? Dating Mother Teresa,
exactly.
dating a Hitler. Your girlfriend's dating a Hitler now.
These are all very personal. Yeah, so it's a weird book, and there's trolls, and there's time travel and stuff, but it's actually very personal.
Yeah. But the girlfriend repair shop...
Yeah, that's sort of a fantasy about a computer programmer who whose girlfriend was blaming him for all of their relationship problems, but it turned out that she just had a screw loose.
And your girlfriend, did she read that one? Did she proofread any of this stuff? Or?
The book is dedicated to her.
I know, but still.
But did she read it? I don't know. I guess we could get her on the horn.
Because, you know, that might, you know, some might take offense at that. That actually, they're automatons. You know, they could be fixed, and it's all just kind of a screw loose problem. And
yeah, when you reach I think the men come out pretty poorly in a lot of the stories as well.
That's true.
You know, I think hopefully, I don't think the book glorifies men either.
Yeah, hopefully everyone comes out poorly. You're saying?
Yeah, exactly. That's always the goal.
In a comic fashion. All these things get to the point where she's saying, what is this? I mean, I love that. Is that like the phrase of your generation, you think?
I think so. Hopefully we'll be able to beat that phrase, you know, come with a better one by the time we all die. But, I think that I think in your 20s, there's especially now, people are getting married later and later. And it's always a tense moment in a new relationship when you have to kind of define and articulate where things are going.
Yeah, what is this?
A lot of stories about that. Yeah.
What does that mean? If you were actually analyzing what that statement, that means, like, what does that mean when they say that?
I think in my grandparents' generation, marriage was a prerequisite for any kind of intimacy.
Yeah.
And so, I think that if you had to get married in order to go on a proper date, I think, you know, people would get married a lot younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
There's stories about people not being able to go out on dates without chaperones just a couple generations ago. So, yeah, things have changed.
You think your dad had chaperones on his dates?
I hope so.
Frank?
I hope so.
He's very proud of you, by the way. I've talked to Frank.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. You didn't know that? He's proud of you and Nat equally.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
What about you? Who are you more proud of?
I'm proud of you both as well. And I'm proud of your dad.
Come on.
I'm also proud of your dad, so I'm proud of a whole family. I'm proud of the entire Rich family.
I'll tell him. He'll be thrilled.
Yeah. Your dad, for me, was like the savior during the Bush years.
Right.
Right, because he was the one guy who was telling it like it was, you know, all his weapons of mass destruction, all this stuff going on. Well, all the other people in the New York Times were folding, you know, into the general, you know, line, the party line, you know. And he was the one guy who was writing, and I waited every week to read what he was going to say, you know, and it was so, and then he quit the Times, and I was so mad at him. Because I was rudderless then, at that point. But this political stuff was never appealed to you, particularly. You're always the comic guy.
Yeah, my favorite writers, and in a lot of respect for that, for essayists, and my greatest heroes growing up were always guys like Kurt Vonnegut or P.C. Boyle or Stephen King or Douglas Adams or Joe Heller, you know, comedy premise-driven writers.
Yeah. And actually, in a way, I mean, you're a young man and everything. Well, you're almost in your 30s, though, so you got to watch out now. You're turning a corner.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
You're ready. You'll be 29, right?
Soon, in a few days.
Yeah. Scary. Anyway, as I recall, I mean, it's been a while since I turned 29. But in a sense, your kind of approach is sort of old-fashioned almost. It is sort of like Thurber-esque, you know. On that level.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, definitely in the sense that I throw a lot of stuff out there and see what sticks. I think that a lot of my favorite writers wrote an almost embarrassing number of books. I mean, if you look at P.G. Woodhouse, there was like a book a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of my heroes. So, you know, I've always felt that the best way to go about things is just to crank out as much as possible, and the good stuff will hopefully float to the top.
Oh. Is it good training to write on Saturday Night Live for future comic?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, and it's similar, you know, because as a staff, we wrote 50 sketches a week, and, you know, six or seven would actually make it onto television.
Yeah.
So you had an enormous turnover, and that pace really trained me, I think, for this book. Because there are only about 30 stories in the book, but I probably wrote 100.
Yeah.
What just didn't make it.
What's Seth Meyer really like?
Really nice.
Beyond that, come on, we know he's really nice.
He genuinely is that nice. And a great teacher. You know, he was head writer when I got there. Tina Fey had just left, and Seth was one of the head writers, and he taught me a ton about comedy writing and also about television writing, because you have to produce your own sketches over there. The writer of the sketches responsible for the sets and the music and the graphics and casting and sometimes even the camera shots. I mean, obviously they have a lot of help, but the buck sort of stops with them, and they get the credit or the blame when the production doesn't work. Yeah. My first year, I came from magazine, so I was terrible at all the visual elements of it. And Seth helped me so much with that stuff. I don't know how I would have gotten through that year without him.
Yeah, I read somewhere you were talking about that Peter Pan skit that you did.
Yeah, I read a sketch about Peter Pan, and Lorne said to me after dress rehearsal, he was angry, and he said, "You can see the wires." And I thought that he was some kind of comedy lingo that I hadn't picked up on yet, but he meant you could physically see the wires.
Yeah.
Because I had screwed up the blocking.
Oh. And he was mad about that. So did you fix that?
Yeah, I hope so. I haven't watched it on YouTube recently, but I hopefully fixed it a little bit.
So you were actually like producing and directing besides writing this stuff, and you had to all do that like in a 2 or 3 day period, right? Get it all blocked.
Yeah, because you write the show on Monday and Tuesday, and then on Wednesday they read all the sketches out loud at a big table, and they pick about 10 or 12, and those go to but you produce them all, and at 10 p.m. on Saturday night you do a 2-hour episode. And then you cut the worst half hour.
Oh, I see. Not always, I'll tell you. Sometimes.
You'd be surprised.
Is that Lorne makes that decision, I suppose, right? What's the worst?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you don't get credit for the sketches, though, right?
Well, sometimes that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. But are there one or two that you stand out that you did that you're really super proud of? Or?
My favorite sketch was probably a commercial parody I wrote for a dog food. Mm-hmm. So it's called Mostly Garbage.
Good concept.
Because you love your dog, but you know, the economy isn't great, and it's just a dog. It's not a person. So it had riboflavin and stuff in it, and vitamins, but it was mostly garbage.
Mostly garbage, yeah. It's a good concept. I like it. Now the book, this is The Last Girlfriend on Earth, and we got, I did want to mention the sex aliens from the planet Sex, because that stirred something in me. I'm not sure what. But
yeah, that's an interesting story.
Yeah. And I'm sort of curious as to the real-life counterpart of that happening, these people who are about to commit in a relationship when suddenly the sex aliens from the planet Sex appear and offer them unboundless sex with beautiful people, and they have to either accept when they're about to commit. So
yeah, he's just said yes.
He's just said yes, yes, Casey. Right.
And he turns them, and he finds out that it's not because he's good looking. Their eyesight, these aliens, their eyesight is very poor, but they have strongly developed senses of smell, and they can smell confidence. And the moment he started dating somebody, he had what he had lacked for many years, which was confidence.
Yes.
and he became impossibly attractive to these highly developed sexual beings. And then ultimately, though, by the time he decides he's going to commit this act of infidelity, they're no longer interested in him because he's desperate and they can smell it.
They can smell it, yeah. They can smell the desperation. So now the counterpart in real life to that one, can you talk about it or not?
I mean, I think everybody deals with that. Hopefully the issues in the book aren't... I like to think I wrote about pretty universal...
Yeah, okay, you don't want to talk about it. That's fine. That's okay. That's cool. I don't blame you.
Hopefully.
But, you know, being a writer on Saturday Night Live, you might probably get a lot of groupies and stuff, I would think, whether you want to know.
Have you seen the show?
Yeah.
It's not really a writer's... I mean, I think that being a writer, you're... it's not like being an actor.
Yeah, okay. All right. So that doesn't happen, what you say.
Or a radio host.
Yeah, no. That's what's known as a dry hole in the...
You know, when you're a radio host,
in the oil,
it's a different
in the oil business.
I can only imagine what kind of... I mean, I don't know what the scene is like right now, but where you're at, but I just imagine hordes of women surrounding you.
Yes, hordes. There's a D in there. Okay. And Elliot Allagash, is that coming out as a movie soon?
Yeah, I'm actually working on it today.
Oh, cool.
It's been really fun turning that novel into a screenplay, and I'm excited about it.
Oh, that sounds really cool. And this is where you take Ivan the Terrible and you put him in high school, and he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about the richest kid in the world, Elliot Allagash, and he's a total monster, and he's been expelled from every reputable prep school on Earth. And his father gives so much money to a school that he basically can't get expelled no matter what he does. So out of boredom, he takes the least popular, dumbest kid in the class and kind of My Fair Lady style turns his life around.
Yeah. So it's a little sort of Pygmalion kind of thing, like a perverse sort of Pygmalion thing.
Yeah, exactly. He says, whatever you want, I can buy it for you. And it's very, devil's bargain sort of story.
Yeah. Do we have an Elliot Allagash actor in mind, or can we not say that yet?
I usually like to be the, you know, as a screenwriter, you always want to be the last person to break news.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you have the least power, so it wouldn't do to, you know.
It would not do. Okay. Given all the possibilities. No, I don't know. Well, that's coming out soon. That's great. And I saw that thing, Drinks with Writers. That's really a cool little show.
Yeah.
Show.
It's almost redundant, that title.
Yeah. it's about writers who drink and writers drinking and drinking with writers and whatever comes out of that. And that's pretty good. You're not a drinker, though, I wouldn't think. I'm a big drinker, right?
Not too badly, I hope.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And okay, well, thanks for your time. I know you're busy and you got to go off. And Last Girlfriend on Earth is the collection. It's very funny. You want to read it. And remember, your dad's very proud of you. Both of you boys equally.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
I hope you are too.
Yeah, I am too. Simon Rich, ladies and gentlemen. Last Girlfriend on Earth. Another love story.